Second down and seven. Fake the handoff. Marshall keeps it. Nothing but green grass. Marshall 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Auburn! 37 yards. Nick Marshall, the quarterback draw. And there was no one around him except Corey Grant until he got down to around the 15-yard line.
Corey Grant had no one to block.
Here's Lewis in motion. They'll hand it to him on the sweep around left end. Lewis with a block down the near boundary at the 40, 25, 30, to the 20, to the 10, to the 5. Taillights! Touchdown, Auburn!
But anyway, we had a chance. Yeah, we knew we had to play close to perfect on offense. And we didn't do it. We didn't play perfect on offense. So we got beat. But it was almost a phone. It was almost a phone. Any questions?
Okay, obviously a big win for us at home. Went down to the very end. A lot of adversity we faced. Our guys found a way to win. We knew that we were going to get their best effort at off week when they played a 1AA team. We felt like they were a top 10 team preseason for a reason. They beat a good Georgia team. They beat another East Carolina team. So they're a very good team. Their coach is one of the better coaches to ever walk the sideline. I think everybody saw that tonight. With the fourth down calls and the onside kicks, and they did a lot of good things. But at the end of the day, our guys found a way to win. Defense didn't play their best, but at the very end they came through and kept them out of the last drive.
I'm meteorologist Reynolds Wolf of the Weather Channel and lifelong Auburn Tiger fan. And the forecast calls for almost credible sports discussion with the AU Wishbone on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary.
Touchdown, Auburn!
Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, holy cow. Wow, I'm still breathing heavily from just like my eyeballs tracking up and down the field, back and forth. That was that was quite a contest played last night in Jordan-Hare Stadium, wasn't it?
Was a little more exciting than you wanted it to be?
I believe I told you last week that I had a feeling it was going to be a closer game than people led on. And in fact, it's funny, a while ago while I was searching around for some audio clips, I found a YouTube video of a sports betting guy, one of those guys that tells you the hot trends to jump on. And his big hot trend for Saturday was jump on South Carolina, because he said if you figure in all the various factors, he expected that game to be a lot closer than people thought. And he was absolutely right. And I mean, we certainly have to dig into it, but give me your immediate reaction as far as what should we take away from that game? What was going on there?
Well, I mean, in the big picture, what I saw going on there is you had, Steve Spurrier, who's one of the best offensive coaches of our lifetime, basically had, 21 days to prepare for Auburn, and use that time to get their offense really ready. And he came into it with the attitude that you have to when you're playing a team that's much better than you on the road, where he was going to take any chance he had to win the game.
That's
onside kick, go for a fourth down, trick plays, whatever. Those are not things you do against teams that you're equal. Those are things you do when the other team is better than you, and you're doing those to survive and try and keep the game close. And that's what he did. He basically rolled the dice the whole game, and what came in with a very aggressive game plan, a lot of downfield passing and a lot of trick plays and stuff, and had a lot of success with it. But at the same time, it still wasn't enough. You know, Auburn's offense, the other side of it is what I saw is that Auburn's offense played their best game of the year and looked great. I thought the offense looked as, you know, as well as it's looked at any point since the end of 2013. And, you know, South Carolina's defense isn't good. We talked about that last week, but it's still, they're still an SEC team and we chewed them up and spit them out on them.
Yeah,
their defense. So
that's one of the questions that we're going to have to get into more in a minute is how much of it was South Carolina's defense and how much was it was our offense. You know,
that's fair. But so that to me, that's the big thing. I think. You know, there were a couple of things that went one way or the other that gave them an extra score that they probably shouldn't have had. They made it closer than it needed to be. But
that's true.
That's kind of how I look at it. I mean, and the other part is that, you know, we want to run South Carolina down because we're like, oh, well, they're not good. But that is the only team that's beaten Georgia. And yeah. Georgia's a legit top 10 team that most people think is going to win, you know, which we certainly think is going to win the East now. So
they seem to play to the level of their competition, don't they?
They do. So, and you know.
I mean, this is a team that struggled to score on Vanderbilt.
Well, they didn't struggle to score on Vanderbilt. They struggled to stop Vanderbilt.
Well, okay, yeah.
I mean, you know, they score a lot of points in SEC games, but, you know, they give up a lot of points, too. So, I mean, they have a really good offense. There's, you know, there's no denying that part. So,
yeah, I guess playing Georgia, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I guess playing Georgia, you had Steve Spurrier helping the South Carolina offense, and you had Mike Bobo helping the South Carolina defense.
That's
so
right.
So with those two great coaching minds at work, South Carolina couldn't lose.
That's probably it.
Yeah. So the other thing I guess we need to mention is that the polls came out this afternoon, and Auburn did, in fact, move up to number 4 in both polls. That's particularly surprising to me, given that in the coaches' poll, we were kind of a little bit lower down. So we've actually climbed up a ways. I guess after the Mississippi State game, we had dropped maybe down to like 6th or 8th or something.
7th.
Somewhere down there. But we're up to 4 in both now. And, I mean, I was very concerned that Oregon was going to come up and overtake us. And I know all the – I mean, I had the conversations on Twitter and everything else. I get the rationale, the reasons why they shouldn't, but that wasn't my point. My point is that I was afraid they would anyway because I really don't trust voters in polls. You know, we've been down that road.
And I think it doesn't matter at all.
It matters to me because it gives an impression of us as a top 14 that belong in the playoffs. And I realize
but it doesn't matter because those people who are voting don't decide on the playoffs.
Yeah, but the other people see it. Don't you think? I mean, don't you think
I think it matters not at all.
I think that being in the top 4 for some portion of the season creates the aura and the ambiance around Auburn of being a top 4 team. And who knows what to think about these? You may be absolutely right about half of them, and I may be absolutely right about the other half, and we don't know.
If the process has any legitimacy at all,
and we don't know that, we don't know if it's going to have any legitimacy at all.
I think it does have some legitimacy. We can have a whole podcast. We just talk about the playoff. Yeah. My thing is the polls that came out today mean 0.0, and I don't care where Auburn is ranked in them. I don't care if we're 20th because it doesn't matter. If we win our games, we're going to be in the playoff. So it is. I don't care what the coaches vote.
We don't know if we win our games, we're going to be in the playoff.
I know that. Okay.
Well,
I do know that.
I don't. This is funny. This is like one of those cancer warnings on a product where it says known to the state of California to cause cancer. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, so, the other 49 states don't know it, only California. So Auburn will be in the playoffs if we win out. Known to John Ringer.
Yes.
But not to the other podcast host.
But so
it is not known to the state of Van Plexico.
Well, here's what I wanted to say, though. The polls today that came out today mean 0.0, and I don't care where they beat Auburn. The poll that matters comes out Tuesday.
Yeah.
But again, the poll that comes out Tuesday will not vote the way you vote.
Right.
It will not be a where we think they will finish. We've already accounted for that.
Right.
It will only be on a what you've done thing.
Yep.
So people won't realize that. And they'll miss that. This is going to be a resume from beginning of season to October 25th poll comes out Tuesday. And people are going to freak out about it. And it's going to change because teams are going to win and lose. And they're going to move up and down. And it's going to be more fluid than the other polls. And people aren't going to be used to that. So that's all I wanted to say about the polls.
All right. If I'm a listener right now, I'm flipping off us and flipping over to the AL.com podcast so I can hear Blake talk about the Birmingham music scene or something. So let's get into more specific worthy topics, I guess. First up, I guess we did sort of touch on the big picture overall. You want to go ahead and just dig into South Carolina a little bit and look at that game?
Sure.
Yeah. You made a good point about Spurrier, the way that he coached that game, the way he called the plays, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that he knew his situation. He knew the drawbacks of his team, the weaknesses of his team, and he coached every play, he coached situationally every play in an effort to try to compensate for that. Would you say that's properly putting it? Right.
I think he knew that his defense wasn't going to stop Auburn.
Yeah.
And so he knew that he had to maximize those possessions and get touchdowns out of them.
And he did.
There were times when he could have played a field position game, for example, and punted and pinned us deep and that kind of thing. But he knew that wasn't going to help him. So he didn't bother.
For a second, I thought you said he could have played a fetal position game. Oh. And I'm like, no, that's what I was playing watching this game. That wasn't what Spurrier was doing. That's what I was doing. So
I thought you liked offense.
Yeah. No. It wasn't the offense I didn't enjoy. It was our defense giving up fourth down after fourth down after fourth down. If there's anything that makes me crazy watching a football game, particularly an Auburn game where everything, you know, is emotionally invested, if there's anything that just makes me run circles around the room raving and beating on the furniture, it's a situation where our defense holds a team to like third and eight or fourth and eight and then repeatedly either gives up a 20-yard pass or something. Yes. Or jumps offside, or commits a personal foul, or fumbles the punt. You know, mm-hmm. when we've done everything right, and then we still give it over to the other side. That when that happens in a serial fashion, it just builds and builds and builds. And so by that last drive, you know, Jesse Palmer, when South Carolina failed to convert with about 5.5 minutes to go, Jesse Palmer goes, well, that's the ball game. And I'm like, there's 5.5 minutes to go. How is that the ball game, right?
Yeah, he wasn't watching very closely to come to that conclusion.
Oh, my gosh. Because did we get one first down, or did we just run a whole lot of clock running three plays and punting? I can't even remember now. I need to go back and watch the whole game all over again, but I know we either ran three plays and punted and gave them the ball back with like, what, a minute and a half? Yeah. Or we got one first down and then three plays and punted. But we didn't do a lot. I know that. And we made some glaring offensive mistakes. I want to say that at least two of the plays before we punted the ball back to them at the end, at least two of the plays, something went horribly wrong and we actually like lost yardage or something. Do you remember that? Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
Yeah.
So. We did. I'm looking at the play by play now. We got the ball back with 5:54 in the
yep.
game.
Yep.
Okay.
So it was even worse than
5:28.
Okay. See, I said 5.5. Okay. There you go.
5:28. Okay. We, in that drive, there was a pass to Quambray that lost 2 yards.
Yep, that's what I'm thinking.
And there was a Rock Thomas rush that lost 1 yard.
Yeah, he kind of went outside and it didn't work.
Yeah, and at that point, you know, they called a timeout and there was a minute 26 left.
Well, how did we go from 5:30 or 5:28 to a minute and a half running two plays?
Well, I mean, there was more plays than that. I mean,
so we did get a first down.
Yeah, no, we got several first downs. Okay. We started on our 19 and we ended up
around midfield or something.
Yeah, closer to midfield.
All right. That's what I was thinking. But we did at some point bog down and have to punt it. And that's what's so funny. We had 8 possessions the entire game. Mm-hmm. 8. This was a very, you know, it's funny. We talked a lot about the 2006 game, the third quarter game.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, I kept pointing out, and they had the ball almost the entire fourth quarter, and nobody remembers that. And in fact, I was listening to one of the other podcasts on our network, and the guys were talking about the third quarter, and I'm like, don't forget the fourth quarter. It was they're like, how amazing that was. I'm like, yeah, but the fourth quarter was the other way around. But anyway, this game was a lot like that. Not so much one whole quarter as just segments. Like, they dominated possession and scored. We dominated possession and scored. They dominated possession and scored. It was not a punt fiesta. They punted one time.
Mm-hmm.
The one time they punted was the first drive. We had the ball eight times. We punted on the first drive. We punted on the eighth drive. And we scored touchdowns on 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. That's pretty bizarre, isn't it?
It is. It's pretty weird.
Yeah.
And so really, there were a couple of key turning points in the game, I thought. And one of them was that series you touched on earlier a minute ago where Bray fumbled to get in after a great punt return. I mean, just absolutely an electric punt return.
Yeah.
He then fumbles. They get the ball. We stop them. Mm-hmm. And then we commit the penalty and give him a first down.
Oh, it makes me crazy.
So those two things happened kind of on the same series of events and led to a touchdown. So, it was two plays, either one of which, both of which were Auburn mistakes and both of which led to a touchdown. Right. And neither one of which should have happened.
All right. I've got this in my mind. I haven't made any notes, but let me see if I can get through this. We gave them, or they took from us, extra possessions and extra opportunities. Including at least one short field.
Right.
All right. We never got any. Oh, and including the onside kick.
That's what I'm saying. So that's a stolen possession and this turnover is a stolen
and
a
turnover
possession.
And all that. Right. So they got at least two extra possessions on short fields.
Mm-hmm.
We got nothing. All of our drives, I've got the numbers here. I had this down to talk about at some point. Okay. I was tweeting about this as it kept developing. Oh no, it's the factoid of the week. I'm going to save it. But the point is, I've got the specifics coming up in factoid of the week. But the generality is, we had to work, even if it was one long play, as you know what I'm talking about. Even still, it had to be a long play.
Mm-hmm.
We had to work for everything we got. They gave us nothing cheap. They gave us no short fields. I was just thinking the 2006 team scored all their touchdowns at the end of the season on like 20-yard drives after the defense turned the ball over.
That's
the
right.
2006 offense would have been shut out of this game.
Mm-hmm.
They would have. I mean, I'm serious. They would have. They wouldn't have gotten across 50-yard line.
No, you're right. Our average starting field position was probably like our 20.
I've got the numbers.
Okay.
You're being generous.
I'm being generous. So you're right that the offense had to do, you know, long, consistent drives and not make mistakes in order to score points. And meanwhile, they had a couple of, with the onside kick and with the punt, the turnover on the punt, that allowed them extra possessions. Then they converted those into points. So
this is silly. Let's go ahead and do it. I'm calling an audible, John. We're doing the factoid of the week.
Okay, go.
Go ahead and hit it, Van. You got it, Van.
Factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week.
All right, there it is. Your factoid of the week, jumping ahead here in my notes. Auburn's six touchdown drives versus South Carolina averaged over 85 yards each, and none was shorter than 75 yards.
Wow.
At one point, it was 87.5, and our last drive was like 85, so I think, but if you average 85 in with an average of 87.5, it's going to come out somewhere around 87, 86.5, something like that.
Hmm.
So our average starting position was around like the 15, 20-yard line.
Yep.
For every touchdown. That's just astonishing.
And I think it's very impressive when you say it that way, because it also makes you think about how good the offense was that they were able to convert over such long distances
and
score so many points. I mean, with that starting field position, you know, we did score a lot of points when you think about it.
Well, I mean, and our drives were not like Tommy Tuberville, Pat Dye drives that took 8 or 9 minutes off the clock. But we still only got 8 possessions because South Carolina was doing a very smart thing, which was grinding it out. And they were doing it through passing, but they were completing the passes and keeping the clock going. Let me see. To kind of expand on the factoid a little bit, what I mentioned on Twitter was that there were no easy drives. And people were saying, well, one was one play. That was pretty easy. I'm like, well, no. by easy, I mean getting the ball on their 15.
Right. They throw an interception and we start on their end of the field.
Right.
Or we have a big kick return and start on their end of the field.
Yeah, so if you count the Ricardo Lewis 75-yard run as a – I'm saying that's 75 yards is not easy any way you do it.
Yeah,
it's a long one play. So, a couple of the numbers that I kind of wanted to give for each drive. Let's see, I've got it here in front of me. Yeah, here it is. I mean, first the scoring summary goes like this: South Carolina Auburn, South Carolina Auburn, South Carolina Auburn. Halftime: Auburn, South Carolina, Auburn, South Carolina, Auburn. I mean, have we ever played a game like that?
It really was like a tennis match, and it was just a question of like breaking serve at some point.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the 1984 Florida State game.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that one where it just went back and forth and back and forth, and we scored to make it 42-41, and then
there was some of those 2010 games that were reminiscent of this.
Yeah, that's true. But this is just so there. I mean, I challenge you guys out there that are into this stuff. Go through our box scores from some games that come to mind and see if there is one that is as pristine as this, where the only time a team has back-to-back scores is divided by halftime. In other words, Auburn scored back-to-back, but the halftime was between it. We got the ball to start the third quarter and scored. But check out the – I just want to run through the drives real quick. 11 plays, 92 yards, 455. Okay. This is all Auburn. 10 plays, 93 yards, 355. 7 plays, 75 yards, 230. 13 plays, 88 yards, 530. 1 play, 75 yards, 11 seconds. And 6 plays, 80 yards, 155. So those were all really long drives, especially in the first half, right? The first half was 92, 93, and 75 for our 3 touchdowns.
Mm.
So when you add those 90s in there, it really skewed that average up into the high 80s. So that just blew my mind. What else? I mean, let's. We've talked about sort of South Carolina, what they were doing, and how that all played out. What about Auburn? We talked about the offense a little bit. I want to get into a little bit of details on both. Let's start though. While we're talking about South Carolina, what they were doing on offense. What did you think about Auburn's defense? Was it? I mean, to me, it was just no pass rush was the story beginning end. Amen. What did you think?
That was really it. I mean, the coverage was not as good as it has been this year. But the biggest thing was pass rush. I mean, we rarely got, you know, pressure on him. Only late in the game did we really start to make a difference there. But there were some real coverage issues, too. I mean, Terese, I thought, had a really bad first half where they matched up on Pharaoh Cooper in the slot.
No kidding.
And I think that got a little better as it went along, but it was funny because Musburger was talking about how great Terese was while he was getting burned constantly.
First time that Brent's been horribly mistaken about something.
Yeah, but he's still entertaining sometimes. Yeah. We did get the coverage was really bad. I thought the pass rush was not good. Really took a step back in that area, I thought. And South Carolina's offensive line is good. They're one of the better ones in the conference. But, you know, we've got to get more pressure on the other team's quarterback or else we're going to have real problems.
So. I got a message from our Weather Channel friend, weatherman Reynolds, this afternoon, who was just pointing one thing out that I thought was really good that I would bring to the show. I'd been thinking about this too, but I'd kind of forgotten about it. He was saying not only did we get no pass rush, we couldn't even get to the quarterback when the center was slowly rolling the ball on the ground back to him play after play. I mean, it looked like the center was playing dice, and he was just rolling the ball.
That was amazing. It's true. He had a real problem at the end of the game getting the ball back there, and we still couldn't get any pressure on him. I mean, the quarterback's looking down at the ball,
which is bouncing along on the ground.
Yeah, and we still couldn't get anybody back there to get a hand on him. That was really just terrible.
That just doesn't seem possible. I mean, how bad do you have to be that you can't get to? I mean, it's on the ground. What was going on with the center that he couldn't even get it off the ground? I mean,
I don't know if he was exhausted and I don't know what was going on, but
I guess. Well, I'd said earlier, I think that I'm beginning to think the player that we're missing this year more than anybody is D Ford, but I guess really Carl Lawson would be also the answer to that. I mean, we can kind of make do with others, but it seems like those guys are just irreplaceable.
They are. They don't grow on trees, and a lot of teams don't have them, don't have those kind of guys. But no, you're right. I mean, and Carl Lawson was important because we hoped he would turn into D Ford. Mm-hmm. You know, he had some of the raw materials of D Ford. He wasn't there yet, but D Ford was huge last year.
Mm-hmm.
He was consistently in the backfield. He was, you know, disrupting the quarterback, even if he didn't get to him. And so getting there a lot and making a sack. So
D Ford had as much to do with us beating Manziel and Texas A&M as anybody on the team.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes me nervous going into the Amen corner here without that kind of ability, not that kind of force for disruption on the defensive front.
Sure. I'm sure it makes our coaches nervous.
Well, that's why Ellis has been doing he's been pulling every rabbit out of the hat he can think of. I mean,
here's the bottom line though. We've got who we got on the team.
Yeah.
And there's not a super pass rusher out there. And your only other choices are, you know, live with it or blitz more people. And if you blitz more people, you're really exposing yourself to like potentially a huge blown play, like an 80-yard gain instead of a 20-yard gain. So they don't like to do that too much. And the other part is it's really only going to burn us against the really good passing teams.
Right. Well, that's why A&M, I mean, they're arguable after all this. But
right.
I think what you're trying to say is that D Ford isn't walking through that door. Carl Lawson, at least for now, isn't walking through that door.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
So we're not, I mean, I'm not sure the pass rush is going to get a lot better. I think it is what it is, kind of. I still think that, I mean, we could cover better than we did Saturday night. And I think we can.
I hope so.
I definitely think we can.
Hey, how much of it was South Carolina's offensive line? Can I just, like, kid myself that it's only because they're so good and we'll be better everybody against everybody else?
I mean, they're really good, but, you know, so is A&M and Ole Miss and Alabama. So
you're not helping me.
I'm just saying, like, you know.
But Georgia?
Really good.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
What I'm saying is that their offensive line is really good, and the other teams have, you know, good offensive lines too. But I think South Carolina's offensive line played well in that game. Here's the other part of this. We were talking about Spurrier managing his expectations. If you're Gus Malzahn, you got to do the same thing and say, you know what? We can't get a lot of pass rush. Other teams going to score more points than we want them to. We got to open up the throttle on the offense a little bit more.
Well, let's do that. This is all depressing. Let's get into the Auburn offense. A little relief. Now, again, same question. How much of this, because I got had a little conversation with some South Carolina people on Twitter, which I'll touch on maybe later if opportunity arises. But I was pointing out, wow, our offense looked a lot better having 2 weeks and kind of going back and retooling some things and all that. And a South Carolina guy said, no, it was just our defense is terrible. And I'm like, well, I wonder how much of each it really was.
I mean, their defense isn't great, but again, their defense had 3 weeks prepared too. So yeah,
that's the truth.
You know, they knew scheme wise, they had, you know, seen what Mississippi State did and other teams did, and they tried to do some of that stuff. But I thought the Auburn offense played much better. Execution-wise, I thought we looked great. I thought, you know, Cameron Artis Payne, Rock Thomas. Cameron Artis Payne looked as good as he's looked this year. I thought Rock Thomas ran well, and I thought Marshall had a great game, both running and throwing the ball.
Oh, he sure did. Hey, I'll tell you this. If we are to go forward and do the things that so many Auburn fans, including us, hope and sort of expect that we're going to do before this season is over, if that is to be a reality at all, the offense must play at something like the level they played against South Carolina the rest of the way. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
They cannot regress.
No, I mean, the defense will have games where it plays better, where you don't give up that many points. But the offense, I mean, again, and we and I have talked about this, the Gus Malzahn has, you know, doesn't lay all his cards on the table at the beginning of the season. He has things he's going to do with the offense that he's not going to pull out, you know, until the bigger games, until, you know, Ole Miss, Georgia, and Alabama. And we, like we saw some of that this week, throwing the ball to Fultz. We hadn't thrown him the ball in 2 years.
I was surprised he didn't go, what's this?
Believe me, the defense was as shocked as you were. They threw him the ball. So they weren't going to bother to cover him.
That actually leads me to another point, which is we did a really good job. And by, you know, you and I did. It was amazing what you and I accomplished in that game, John. Now, Auburn did a really good job. Gus and the offensive staff and Nick, absolutely Nick, did a really good job of spreading the ball around.
Mm-hmm.
It was remarkable. I mean, when you consider that Ricardo Lewis had 3 carries for 102 yards.
Yep.
I mean, that's spreading the love around right there. We had let me see. We had Cap had 167, 6.7 average. Let me just tell you right now, if Cameron Artis Payne can carry the ball 25 times, 167 yards, 6.7 average the rest of the season, we're in the playoffs.
Yep.
Ricardo Lewis, 3 for 102. One was 75, of course. Nick went 10 for 89. That's an 8.9 average with 3 touchdowns, which I believe they said was his record. I thought he'd had 3 again. I thought he had like 7 against Tennessee last year on the ground, but that's fine. Rock Thomas had 8 carries for 34. Now, that was interesting because Rock only averaged 4.3, but it seemed like Rock's carries were a lot. It seemed like several of those were like up the gut, right in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Which is if he's Cadillac, you kind of want him dancing around the edge more than you want to Ronnie Brown him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I mean, I think he can do that too. And I think you have to show both. You don't want the defense knowing, oh, he's in the game, he's going to run wide every time. So
I was holding my breath with him holding onto that rock. Corey Grant. Now this was interesting. Corey Grant had 1 carry for 3 yards, which continues to make me wonder what's the deal with him. But I was so excited. When Nick checked down, and then hit Corey Grant as like the third option on that one pass, yep. And he went for 28 yards on it.
Yeah, that was a great play.
So,
and that's the kind of thing that, you know, when you got Coates and Duke Williams out in the pass pattern and stuff, and Corey Grant, you know, Corey Grant like runs the sweep and then he'll hand him the ball, he should be open over there.
Yeah.
And so it's a great option.
I was
gonna make the other team defend it.
I was just yelling at the screen, throw it to Grant. Nick, he's wide open. Please, Lord. Because I said a slightly younger Nick. Nick last year would have just chucked it downfield 50 yards and not even looked at his release valve. So Nick is playing more mature, I think. He certainly showed it in this game, I thought.
Oh yeah.
So,
here's what people want to say things about Nick Marshall. I thought he played great in that game. He has not thrown a pass this year where you're like, who the heck was he throwing that ball to?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like he has 3 interceptions, and 2 of them the ball was tipped after left his hand, and 1 of them the guy hit his arm. He has not thrown one of those passes where he throws it, you know, and there's like he throws it right to the defender, or you know, he throws it and the Auburn receiver is anywhere near it or whatever. He's been pretty accurate. So,
yeah, it's funny too. He ended up 12 of 14 for 139, 9.9 average and a touchdown. You know, the only the quarterback that had a higher rating than that in the game was Jonathan Wallace, who had a 100 on 1 for 1. I thought it was interesting that it was Jonathan Wallace and not Jeremy Johnson.
I think this is Gus being the high school coach, trying to get everybody in the game.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So, well, anything else about the Auburn offense? I just was happy to see them clicking finally.
Well, I thought the offensive line played a good game.
Well,
I think we've had some issues with them, and I thought they really executed well. And there wasn't, you know, the run blocking was better, and the pass blocking was better too. So, you know, I thought, you know, guys. And I thought the receiver blocking was better.
Yes, yes.
I thought that was a big part of the perimeter running was there was a lot better receiver blocking than we've had the last couple of games.
Yeah, when I always say when Auburn receivers block for Gus's offense, good things happen because that means you're able to get on the edge and get downfield. I mean, it's the difference between Grant or Ricardo Lewis getting stopped for like a 2 yard loss or a 2 yard gain versus getting 8, getting 12, getting 20, getting 75.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
So that was – I was very, very happy. Man, that's a big – yeah, any kind of blocking improvement anywhere on the offense is a good thing. And it's time that that happened, I thought. The special teams didn't have a lot to do in this game, I don't think, really, other than kicking off, and that seemed okay.
No, and the punt return fumble, which is disappointing. So – I mean, Bray's been great as a returner, but he can't do that to us, you know, and hurt us like that. But I know that other than that, special teams, I think South Carolina special teams were good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think their kicker did a really good job and their coverage team. So that was part of the issue we had.
The just looking real quick, I was kind of curious. The South Carolina touchdown drives, honestly, they weren't that, other than that one, they weren't that much shorter than ours. 75. 75, 42, which is one we talked about, 72, 75. So it really was a game of both offenses having to go the length of the field back and forth.
Well, and this is the other thing. We talked about them going forward on fourth down a lot. I mean, when you just look at the third downs, okay, at third down conversions, they were 6 for 14 for the game.
Yeah.
That's not terrible. No. I mean, it's not awesome. You'd rather be like 4 or 5 for 14, but against a good offense, that's not terrible. And that's you. I mean, if you said that before the game, they were 6 or 14 third down, I'd said we would won by 20 points. But here's the difference.
Yeah.
On you know, so 8 of those third downs they didn't make it. Okay.
Right.
On 6 of those 8, they went for it on fourth down and they made it 5 times.
Yeah.
So that 5 of 6 on fourth down for the game.
That's
the part where it goes bonkers or when it really, really.
I've never heard of such a thing.
That's the plays when, you know, Auburn's had games where we were the underdog and we went and kind of did crazy stuff and went forward and that kind of thing in some of these games. And that's what they did and it worked for them. But, you know.
Yeah. I've never heard of such a thing. Let's see. They had almost the entire fourth quarter. That just again makes me think about the 2006 game. We scored with 11:22 to go in the game, and we only had that one more possession, and that's the one where we punted. So basically, other than that one little brief possession with a punt, South Carolina had the ball from 11:22 until the end. And once again, as happened so many times, it seems like they were throwing into our end zone on the last play. You know, that was how the 2006 game ended. That was how the 2010 first game ended. So that's three games against Spurrier, South Carolina that have ended with them throwing into our end zone incomplete on the last play. And every single time they've lost. Isn't that amazing?
A little too close to comfort.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You want to look ahead to Ole Miss?
Yeah. Let's talk about them.
What do you think? I mean, well, the first question, and this is one that immediately came to my mind as we were, you know, as we were watching the game, my wife, you know, says something along the lines of, you know, are you rooting for Ole Miss or LSU, whatever? And I'm like, well, I'm like, you know, my gut, I'm rooting for LSU because they're the scrappy. I never thought I'd say I'm rooting for the scrappy underdog LSU in Tiger Stadium at night against the swaggering, arrogant Ole Miss Rebels. That just doesn't sound right. But that's obviously what I was doing. But then as it actually started playing out that could happen, I started questioning myself. This was funny. I had a second TV set up with that game on, and I would be watching the South Carolina game, you know, just constantly. I glance over, 7-3. I'd watch the other game, watch it, glance over, 7-3. I'm like, are they on lightning delay? No, they just kept punting, right? It was just a punt.
It was a very old school kind of defensive struggle.
There were probably more punts in one quarter of the LSU Ole Miss game than an entire Auburn game.
I'm sure there were.
Golly.
There was a lot of, you know, I mean, we've seen LSU. They're a good running team. The quarterback's okay.
Depending on which one you're talking about.
Right, but I mean, Jennings played the game. And
is that the young one or the older one?
The older one.
So they're going back to the older one now. I don't know. After they played us, I didn't know what they did.
No, after they played us, they basically gone back to the older one. He's the one that beat Florida and, has played mostly since then.
I was wondering.
And they really did a good job rotating their tailbacks and just basically pounded at straight at Ole Miss. Before we get into the details, I had the same thought that you did. Like, I don't know whether this is good for Auburn or not.
Right.
I mean, part of me wanted Ole Miss to be undefeated.
Sure.
So that they, would be like, so full of themselves or whatever. But the other part of me, feels like, maybe they'll freak out this week a little bit about being, on top of the world and now losing and now game day's not going there and all that kind of stuff. So.
And they're now, you don't care about the polls, but they're now below us. So we're actually still underdog. We are three points. That's home field.
You say home field advantage is 3 points, then basically people think the game's a toss up.
It's a toss up. You know, the one consequence, I mean, because it is, to quote Lord Satan in Tuscaloosa, it is what it is. I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's good for us or bad for us. It happened.
Yes. Right?
I mean, that's just how it is. But here's the one ramification that actually is consequential. There can no longer be a three-way tie with one loss each in the SEC West.
There can be a four-way, two-loss tie.
Well, yeah, but I mean that gets a little more out there. You're
saying that's out there. ESPN ran a thing today. There's like a 45% chance of that happening.
Nah, that's not gonna happen.
Okay, you said I was wrong, and I'm saying I think the two-loss scenario with two-loss things is very realistic.
That scenario is known to the state of Van Plexico to not be very likely. Ole Miss, what do we think about – well, their defense. Now, this game has a special place in your heart, doesn't it? Because this is the Landshark defense. And the people out there don't know real quick that John and I were charter members of a fantasy football league for many years. It disbanded in ruin some time ago, but for quite a few years there, we were on like the ground floor of this thing back when
we were in college. I was going to say – We were playing fantasy football long, long before most people ever heard of fantasy. We were playing fantasy football in like the late 1980s.
We were playing football when there was a Soviet Union.
Yes.
We were playing fantasy football before most of my students were born. Okay. So.
Right. And the great thing was like, this is before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we literally would take the box scores out of the newspaper and do the
USA
calculations.
Today.
And
USA
we would
Today was our friend.
That's it. We would hang the standings and the scores up on the wall in our apartment at Auburn. So.
Yeah. So, John's team, which multiple championships, I believe, were the Siberian Landsharks.
Yes.
And so John has had that affinity to the Landshark thing going for many years. And so I tell you what, when the beer came along, I'm like, there's a Landshark stadium. Now I know where his team played. And then now this. So it's just funny how that dumb Chevy Chase skit from 1975 or whatever just endures. But so they've got a defense. They're not maybe – I mean, are they less than we thought? Are they the same as we thought? They're not better than we thought. What do you make of the Ole Miss defense after what we saw with LSU?
I think their defense is still the real deal. Yeah. I mean, how many points did they give up in that game?
Yeah, really, 10, right?
Okay, 10. They've held, I think it's 9 or 10 opponents in a row to less than 20 points,
yes.
To 20 points or less. And you think about that in the current era of scoring in the SEC, that's pretty freaking impressive.
How many points are we going to get on them?
It's difficult. After saying that, it's difficult to say we're going to score more than 20.
Yeah.
I mean, I think maybe we get to 24, but that's going to take everything we got.
It's not going to be another week where our kicker doesn't get a chance to kick field goals.
There's going to be some field goal tries in this game.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, like possessions matter to the South Carolina game, but possessions are going to matter in this game too, because you can't squander them. Right. If you get, you know, on their end of the field, we need to come away with 3 points at least.
Yeah.
Their defense is really good. It's, you know, they, unlike Mississippi State, they have more kind of five-star future NFL guys on it. They're very talented. They're fast. They're experienced. At Pruitt, the safety, is, you know, probably the, an All-American. The issue I heard today, you know, one of the Kandichi brothers, the one that's the linebacker, got hurt in that game and came out, and he may not play. And that would be a big loss because he's really, really good. And the other one, the older brother, got banged up in that game too. That made the younger one, the defensive end. And but they have a lot of depth. They have a lot of talent. They got size. And, you know, the big thing is, like, they're well coached, they're in position, and they make tackles. I mean, they, you know, when you're out there, they get their hands on you, and then they have a lot of the guys that could get in the backfield, even if it's good offensive lines, and cause problems. So Auburn's going to have his hands full with his defense. You know, we're not going to be able to line up and run the ball straight at them. Although, here's my only thing about their defense. Mm-hmm. LSU lined them up and went straight at them with their old I-formation fullback run again, like, and again.
1985.
And, well, but you know, here it's the Les Miles thing. It's like they do in other games. The cumulative effect ended up helping them win the game in the second half of pounding, 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 and accepting. Get 2 or 3 yards. We don't get a first down. We punt. We come back the next time. We pound and pound and pound them. Maybe we get a first down. We pound them some more, and then we punt. And don't lose the game by giving them a turnover or anything, or taking crazy chances. But in the second half, they had worn down the Ole Miss defense a little bit, and they had one really good long drive where they ran the ball like 15 times in a row all the way down the field. And then they got to like the 2 yard line and did a play action to a tight end and scored.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
And I think there's a little bit of a body blow theory thing with the Ole Miss defense, where maybe they took this pounder from LSU and maybe it softened them up a little bit. It's going to help Auburn's running game. You know, they played good defense against Auburn last year, but it was at home, and Auburn ended up beating him. Marshall had a good day throwing the ball. So that was the game where we broke out the zone read, I believe. And they, you know, they were kind of the first victim of that. So that's a play that could be a real equalizer against that defense. And Marshall keeping the ball could be a big factor. But I think, you know, their defense, it can't undersell it. I think they're still the best in the conference. I think we're going to have a hard time scoring a lot of points. I do think Auburn can get to, you know, 20, 24, 27 against them. And our defense is going to have to hold them to less than that. So
every game we've played with Ole Miss the last 5-6 years just runs together in my mind. They all seem like they're about 27-23 or something.
It was, and last year it was like 30-20.
Yeah.
And we scored at the end, I think, to make it that. But they were in the game to the, you know, in the fourth quarter. So the biggest thing is they can't run the ball, really, in my opinion. Especially, like, it gets to, like, short yardage. You know, third and three or something like that, they're going to be trying to throw the ball. They have a couple of running backs that are smaller guys that are quick, but they don't have a real, you know, they don't have a power back. They don't have a guy like that Robinson guy from Mississippi State or Cameron Artis Pick.
He had a game, didn't he?
He did, or Gurley or those other guys. But
they're all McCaleb, no Dyer.
They are. They're very much so. And so they're quicker on the edge, and it causes problems. But, you know, they end up running the quarterback a lot in short yardage, and he's not, you know, Cam Newton physically. So
he's not Dak Prescott.
He's not. So I think, it ends up being a real issue for them. And I think that's an area where we get them in short yardage. If Auburn can hold them and force them to punt, I think we're going to be okay, because that's what LSU did. LSU had excellent coverage in their receivers. And Wallace did not have a great night. But, again, that was on the road at night in Tiger Stadium, and it was incredibly loud and stuff. So they're going to be playing at home. That's going to help them in terms of that stuff. But, you know, Auburn's got to play good defense and shut down the running game, play good coverage on them. And I really think, you know, we can match up well against their offense, much better. They don't have near the running backs that South Carolina do. Not on the same planet. So we don't have to worry about that so much.
We don't want to go 0 for Mississippi.
Mm-mm. No, and I really think Auburn could go in there and win the game. It's going to be a close, lower-scoring game. But I think our offense is playing at a high level, and this is by far the best offense that, you know, Ole Miss has seen with their defense. So I think we can go in there and make plays and get out with a win.
Yeah. Well, I guess what do you think is probably the single key matchup or single key position on the field? I mean, I felt like maybe against South Carolina, it really came down to Nick Marshall making some good decisions, both in the running and the passing mm-hmm. game, and getting everybody involved. You know, what do you think it's going to take? I mean, besides our field goal kicker maybe having a good night, because I really do think he's going to end up having a lot more opportunities.
Sure. I think, you know, Duke Williams, their secondary is great. They have a great secondary. So Duke Williams and Coates against that secondary are going to be big.
Yeah.
You know, can they get open? Can they catch the ball? Can they make plays when those guys are covering them? I think that's a huge matchup in that game.
How many yards Cameron Arcega have? Because that really you can judge a lot based on that number right there, can't you? Nick's going to have his 70 to 80 probably, just because if nothing else works, he'll be doing that.
Yeah.
But if Cap has over 100 along with that, that means we've got at least about 200 yards rushing, which is a step up, you know.
I don't know.
Is he going to crack 100?
I would say no.
No. So maybe 80 from Cap at the most.
80 from him. And
80 from Nick.
And, you know, 20 or 30 from Rock or something.
Yeah. Mm. And somebody else, somebody unexpected is going to have a game.
That's right.
That's what it's going to take.
So I think, again, the biggest thing is just we got to go in there and execute at a high level. We cannot go in there and screw around like we did in the state game and you know, shoot ourselves in the foot 10 times. We have to go in there and play good, clean football. And if we do that, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
I think if we don't go in there and give them a bunch of easy stuff, then I think we're going to be okay.
All right. Any last thoughts about the Ole Miss game?
No, I think, you know,
it's not going to be the CBS game anymore, or is it?
No, it's not the CBS game.
The cocktail party.
Yes.
Oh, that was a brilliant stroke of genius by ESPN.
I mean, I guess it would have been better not having it be a night game, but I'm fine with it. So.
All right.
It's going to be, you know, the other part is, they played a good game against Alabama. They had some bad luck in that game. They shut Alabama's offense down completely. But I think there's a big difference with Alabama's offense and our offense.
Yeah, we're going to learn a lot there. That's interesting. This is one of the opportunities we're going to have to really see a comparison of how Alabama did in the game versus how we did. Of course, the thing there is Alabama in that game was, it seemed like, the Stone Age compared to now. They're so different now. So who?
No, I mean,
this is a weird season.
No, I don't think this is it. I think it's the exact same thing. The difference is Ole Miss defense is that good.
Okay.
And Texas A&M's defense is that bad. And the other part is, again, we talked about this 20 times, home field advantage. Alabama at home, big difference. Alabama on the road, not the same.
That's a good thing we don't have to play Alabama in Alabama. Oh, crap.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, we have a new feature this week, and I don't know how long it'll stick around. He's on Twitter now. Our good friend Coach Snyder, he's now on Twitter at @AskCoachSnyder. So you can follow at @AskCoachSnyder, and you can ask him questions, and he's agreed to come on our show. Again, I don't know how long this is going to go before it gets the plug pulled on it by certain people. But I thought we did get a few questions for Coach Snyder tonight, and so I thought we might see if we can answer a few of them quickly.
All right, you ready?
Let's see if Coach Snyder's online. Coach Snyder, are you there? Fire away!
Okay, our first question comes from Johnny Dent, who says, which event from 1933 do you remember more vividly, Hitler's election as chancellor or South Carolina's last victory over Auburn?
Well, I was on the staff at South Carolina that year. I was in charge of polishing the leather helmets. That's not a euphemism, young man. Get your dirty thoughts out of the gutter. And I remember saying this Hitler whippersnapper, he's going to amount to something, but it didn't work out too well. So moving along.
All right, here's a question from John Ringer.
Oh, I've heard of him.
How would you compare the Kansas State loss to Auburn to your experience at the Battle of Waterloo?
I don't know why that's so funny. I was actually in Belgium during that game, and Coach Napoleon brought out quite a varied offense with his column and square formations, but the British coach, whose name escapes me at the moment, it has been a few days.
Duke of Wellington.
Yes, Coach Duke of Wellington. I said to him, Coach Duke of Wellington, should we go with the prevent defense or blitz? And he went with the blitz that day, and history has shown the results.
All right, next question comes from Albise, who says, since Kansas State owns the state of Texas now, will you sell it or just rent it out?
I'm going to open up my own chain of fast food places, Coach Schneider's Fried Chicken Wings, and we're going to blanket the state of Texas in them. It's going to be nice. That's a hot sauce.
All right. Nancy Cole says, when you got word the Titanic sunk...
Oh, that was a tragic day. Tragic day.
What did you do to get your program back on track?
The players were distraught. Well, the players were so distraught. They knew the Titanic had gone down. Gone down just like Oklahoma went down last week.
Okay. A couple more from Teddy Min, who
Moving
says...
Moving right along. This man is a man in a hurry. He's a young man in a hurry. I understand. Go ahead.
How did the invention of the telegraph change your recruiting strategies?
Oh, the telegraph. No longer did I have to get on my pony and ride 7 days across the windswept plains of Kansas to visit a young man loading ox carts and compliment him on his physical prowess loading the ox cart and ask him to play offensive line for me. I could now say... Dear big giant man loading ox carts, come play for me at Kansas State. Stop. And he stopped, so it worked out real well.
Our next question comes from Josh, says at the Blipster, who says, can you ask your good friend John William Heisman who he thinks the best player in the country might be now?
It's probably that Red Grange. The way that the Galloping Ghost runs that single wing veer is just very inspiring. I expect Mr. Grange will be standing in New York accepting the honors.
Okay. That's all. Thank you, Coach Schneider, for
That's
your
all you got? Seriously? Well, I got to get back to Manhattan to coach him up. We had to keep winning so that you Auburn fellas can keep having your strength of schedule good. I know you just keep sending me your questions, and I'll do the best I can. Good night, everybody. All right. I appreciate Coach Snyder coming on. That's do we have actual listener questions for us, perhaps? Were they all for Coach Snyder this week?
No, we have some Western questions for us.
All right. Let's get them on out here. Thanks, Coach Snyder. Right. Have a good trip back to Manhattan. Thank you, son.
All right. Our first question comes from Ayuditude,
yeah,
who says his first question is kind of what the – and he says if you could go into specific detail about your answer, I would greatly appreciate it because I'm lost. Maybe a short PowerPoint with some charts and graphs.
Yeah. I assume he means just he was shocked at the way the game played out. So
yes.
Okay, well, we've just done that, so hopefully the PowerPoints came across on the audio very well.
Okay, our next question comes from Emily Rios, who asks, yeah, what was the biggest impact on the improved running game? Better line play, bad defense, or letting Nick run and not sit back in the pocket? What did you think?
Yeah, I think we just talked about that too. I guess it was just some combination. We so badly want it to be all what we did. And again, you and I, John, we did so much. We so much want it to be what Auburn did. And I hope that there was at least 50% was what Auburn did and not all just South Carolina being crap on defense.
No, I understand they're not as good as Mississippi State on defense. That's fine. But some of it was Auburn just executed the plays better than we have recently.
Well, that's what Gus always says, right? Comes down to execution.
It does. And I mean, watching the game, I could see we were executing better on offense than we have recently. There were a lot fewer mistakes on offense than we've had recently. I mean, the other thing is I wonder, like,
has all this Rock Thomas talk kind of lit a fire under Cameron Artis Payne's rear end? I really thought that.
Yeah,
I thought he ran harder and quicker than he has at any time this year.
How could it not? I mean, did you notice he started the game,
mm-hmm.
carried the ball the first play, then what happened on the second play?
Rock Thomas came in.
And was there for two or three plays. And they showed Cap standing on the sideline. I'm thinking, that man is not happy right now.
That's what I'm saying. I think it was kind of done on purpose. Like the light of, I mean, I don't know what it was, a motivational thing, but I'm saying they were saying, you know, you got to produce if you want to keep getting carries.
Yeah.
And I mean, went out and produced.
And they did kind of cycle it around a little bit to start. It wasn't just Cap and then Rock. I mean, because then Corey Grant got, you know, a carry or so. Mm-hmm. But then it came back to Cap, and he did. I mean, he made a good point, I thought, in the post game where he said that it makes a lot of difference when you're getting met at the line of scrimmage versus having some space.
Yep.
So
because he doesn't get up to speed as quick as some of the other running backs.
Well, but that's been the thing, is that Trey could get his own space.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Cap's a more conventional running back. Trey is like a jack-in-the-box popping out of the box and through the hole.
But so some of it is, I think they figured out plays that work better for him to give him more time to get up to speed. So
you just don't need to like sweep him out wide or something, because he's just, by the time he gets there, there's four guys waiting on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right. Next question says, Emily Rios, this is Clem's for her husband, who's G Rios, AU03. Mm-hmm. He says, were the defensive troubles poor execution or a result of Spurrier throwing the whole playbook at Auburn?
I think it's a little bit of both again. I mean, I think that our defensive struggles would not have looked nearly as bad against a coach that was coaching conventionally.
Well, and I think, again,
because they would have punted on fourth down a lot.
That's right. Well, or I think, again, South Carolina played Kentucky like 21 days ago and then had a week off and then played Furman, who they didn't game plan for at all.
Right.
So they basically spent 21 days practicing, getting healthy, and preparing for Auburn. So, that's not an advantage that other teams are going to get.
Right.
So that made a big difference for them. And I think that's part of why their offense performed at a high level. But the other side is, I think Auburn's defense played its worst game. It was pretty evident. I think the tackling wasn't as good.
Yeah.
And I think their communication wasn't as good. There were some blown assignments on coverage and that kind of thing. And that contributed to them having a lot of success, especially the fourth down plays were the.
Let me just point out again, in a conventional game, Auburn gets that offense off the field five times more than they did, six times more than they did. We took them to fourth down six times, and they converted five. Yeah. So I mean, you know, normally those would have been punts.
Yep.
You're giving Steve Spurrier four plays to get first down every sequence.
Mm-hmm.
That's just 2.5 yards a play. Steve Spurrier can get 2.5 yards a play.
Yep.
He's freaking Steve Spurrier.
But some of that is he has to be willing to go there.
I know he made the commitment in his mind before the game to do it. I get that. But once he does, it did not play out like a conventional game. And I'm just saying, I don't know if you can judge our defense completely based on something that was so unconventional.
Yes, that other teams are not going to be willing to
do. Other teams are not going to do that, and we will get them off the field on fourth down. They will punt. They will not keep going for it the entire stinking game, period.
Mm-hmm. Ole Miss will not do that.
No, they will not do that.
All right, our next question comes from
Hugh Freeze will do something else dumb, but not that.
He's going to again, I think he had no idea what Bo Wallace was doing on that throw at the end of the game. But that relates to our next question, who comes from All Beast, who says, what do we need to get the bad Bo out to play on Saturday?
Well, that's really the thing, isn't it? I mean, when their running game isn't all that great, it really just does come down to, you know, it's almost like with South Carolina a few years ago with what's his name?
Tannehill?
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking of, Tannehill. I'm thinking of their 2010 quarterback that was there forever, Garcia.
Yes.
You either get the guy who takes down Alabama or you get the guy that makes all kind of mistakes. And I mean, it really does come down to getting the Bo Wallace that makes mistakes. And unfortunately, a lot of mistakes are created by a defensive front doing something proactively, and it worries me that we're going to give Bo Wallace a lot of time to find his targets. That really concerns me.
Sure. It's interesting. One of the things, you know, Hugh Freeze has been a hurry-up offensive coach.
Yeah.
But one of the things they've really changed this year, they've slowed down on purpose.
Yeah.
Because their defense is so good, they don't want to go as fast anymore. They want to go slower and be more precise and make the right read and the right call every time and execute better. And because they don't need to wear the other team down with their offense as much because their defense isn't going to allow them any points. And I think it's made Wallace better this year. And so I think that's something to look for. I don't expect Ole Miss to try any up-tempo stuff against us. And that may be something where if Auburn could get a string a couple first downs together, maybe we can go tempo on them and get something.
You know, it was interesting. There was a point early in the game where it looked like when we were down 7, it looked like we were going to be down 14. That Gus started going up tempo, and then we kind of slowed it back down again. And we started prairie dogging. We were like tempo, and then we started prairie dogging. And we started prairie dogging. I'm like, oh, here we go. I mean, you know, we've got to put the foot on the brakes again. You know, it's like they brought Chizik in for a special appearance on coaching to tell Gus to slow it down again. So, I mean, I guess he had reasons for doing it. It was strategic and everything. But it always aggravates me when we start going Auburn fast, because apparently Auburn fast is medium.
Part of what happens is with that kind of thing, you know, they get the other team to show what they're going to do on defense, and then they look over and the coaches call an audible. And
prairie dog, prairie dog.
Yeah. And so some of it is we're taking advantage of what the other team is doing, and that results in a positive play. So, you know, you don't want to do that all the time, but some of it is kind of we really, really need to, you know, in a close game, we need to take advantage of every play and every possession. They're trying to get the things exactly right, so. All right, our next question comes from Reynolds Wolf, who says, is this the worst Auburn pass rush in a decade? And that's a good question. When was the last time we couldn't rush the quarterback like this?
Oh, it's true. I mean, you know, I was hoping that, like, a big fellow named Fick Nairley with a fake mustache was going to show up and play in the second half, have some eligibility left. Even in the years that our offense was terrible, like 2008, or even 06 when it wasn't great, we still had a good, solid defensive front. We've always had a good, solid defensive front. Even the 2010 team, whose secondary was terrible, still, I mean, Nick Fairley and the other gentleman could get back there, you know, Noza. And what's his name that was with us for like 2 years, went off to the NFL. Those guys could get back there in a hurry. So it has been quite a while, I think.
And the other part is, again, we've had defensive lines that could stop the run, but it's been a while since we couldn't rush the passer at all.
1994?
I don't know. This is a good question. I'm going to go back and do some research on
the 94 team had one of the best secondaries in Auburn history, but they had no defensive front, and they had very little, except for maybe Willie Whitehead, but even if he was still there that year, he may have been a senior in 93. But, they had no linebackers hardly, and no front. They were all secondary.
All right, we're gonna do some research on this question. Right. Get back to you here, Reynolds.
We got a lot of questions this week. Good grief.
We did. I told you that's where we're going. Auburn Elvis says, "Did the NCAA pass a new rule where offensive holding is allowed if you also trip the defender?"
Yeah, apparently. I saw a terrible. Lot of it. Yeah,
terrible.
They don't call holding anymore unless we do it like as an offensive pass interference. Side effect.
That was some bad officiating in that game.
It was terrible officiating in that game.
All right, next question comes from Aetitude, who says, can you guys put out an Amber Alert for Peyton Barber and Derek Moncrief? They seem to have gone missing.
I think that Corey Grant like kidnapped him and locked him in his closet to help his playing time, and it hasn't worked.
That's fair. Wardam Wade asked a question kind of similar to what we said. You know, is it should we chalk up the defensive woes to USC to Spurrier versus Ellis, or should we be concerned about this as some future opponents can do?
Yeah, let's keep it as a one time thing until we see otherwise.
That's right.
Ross Hatcher asked a really good question. He says, what is it with the poor judgment on challenges by Gus? Is he too emotional sometimes in the game?
Somebody's giving him information, and I think I know what he means. I think every time that it's happened, it's been one of those things where it's a critical moment and you kind of think it could be overturned, but it never is. Has he ever gotten anything overturned that way? I don't think so.
I don't know.
I don't think
it's
so.
Probably not. And it's the kind of thing where they have to make a very quick decision to tell him so he can challenge it before the next play gets run. And
it's very situational, and it's been – yeah, it just hasn't worked out.
Yeah, but the past two games, he's been more animated, excited than I've seen him.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, intense.
Yeah.
He was intense during that game on Saturday night.
Yeah, and it worked out.
All right, last question comes from Clint Richardson, who's asking a really good question. He says,
former guest.
Do our expectations for games expecting to blow out South Carolina ruin the enjoyment of the game because, like, for example, we didn't beat them by enough?
Let me just say, again, I was listening this morning because there weren't any new shows up on the network yet. I was just kind of curious. I was listening to, like, one of the last ones from before the game, and those guys were arguing about – I forget which show it was, but those guys were arguing about would it be like 55-7 or 60-7. And I'm sitting there going – go back and listen to last week's show. I said this game is going to be closer than people think. So I didn't feel that way. I just wanted to win, and it didn't shock me. The only thing that shocked me was that they came out and almost went up 14-0. And that way, it kind of reminded me. In fact, several of the passes that they threw in this game reminded me of Auburn Florida games and of Florida games in the past, where their quarterback hit wide open receivers walking into the end zone. You know, there was a lot about this game that reminded me of Florida games against Auburn in the past. And you remember in 93 when they drove down, they had beaten our brains out in 1991, 92, and in 93 with Spurrier. And in 93, they came in Terry Bowden's first year, and they drove down the field and scored and went up 7. I want to say they got a field goal, go up 10-0, and they were driving down again down to our 10-yard line or so, about to score and go up 17-0 in the first quarter. And that's when they threw that interception that we took back the other way. Again, yeah. You and me, because we played such great secondary at Auburn. You and I, John. No, and it made it 10-7 instead of 17-0. That's what that kind of made me think. I was thinking, here goes Spurrier going to get us in a 14-0 hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I started having flashbacks to Mississippi State and to 1993 Auburn. And fortunately, was when Casanova McKenzie intercepted the pass in the middle, right?
Yep.
Again, that also reminded me of Auburn Florida games in the past where Spurrier has his quarterback just chuck it down the middle and then we intercept it. So if you guys want to have some real good fun of Auburn versus Spurrier, go watch highlights from the 93, which are hard to get. It wasn't on TV, or 94 Auburn Florida games. You will find some entertainment watching their quarterbacks, Werfel and I forget the other one.
Terry Dean
just winging that ball all over the field and our secondary picking it off. Oh,
it was a great, great game.
Everybody remembers the 94 LSU game for interceptions, but go watch the 94 Florida game. You'll have a good time, I promise. I was at that game, by the way. That was a fun time.
All right.
I woke up in somebody's apartment the next day in Tallahassee. I kid you not. I woke up in somebody's apartment in Tallahassee wrapped in a Florida State blanket on the floor. I immediately checked to make sure I had both kidneys.
There's no pictures of that.
I'm not making any of that up. Moving on.
All right. Let's talk about the go around the SEC real quick here. Wrap it up. All right. So Alabama beat Tennessee 34-20.
It was objects in the mirror are closer than they appear. I mean, or if not as close as they appear, right? 34-20. It was like 34-0 at one point, right?
I don't think it was that high. I think it was like 17-0 maybe before Tennessee did anything. But you're right. It's a little deceiving. Right. But again, Tennessee was without their starting quarterback in this game, so I'm not giving a lot of credence to that. We talked about Ole Miss, LSU, Mississippi State, Kentucky, 45-31. You ready to give a little credit to Kentucky now?
Kentucky, they looked very good on offense in that game. There was a moment late when it was like 38-31 Mississippi State and Kentucky had the ball.
Yeah.
And they threw, I think they went for it on fourth down and the receiver dropped the ball or something.
Yep.
That would have made it 38-38.
Well, they and then they scored and they went an onside kick and they were down seven with an onside kick and the Mississippi State guy grabbed the onside kick and ran it back all the way and they were down 14.
So they were like one play away from tying the game and you blink your eyes and the guy's running back the onside kick for a touchdown.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah, it's just poor Kentucky. So, but no, but I give you credit. Yeah, their offense looked very good.
They have talent. I think they're clearly one of the better teams in the East, and I think they Mississippi State is who they thought they were. Yeah, their defense is still good, but they're not awesome. And I think their offense is pretty darn good.
Mississippi State is like a big 18-wheeler, but the engine's smoking. There's sparks shooting out. There's flames down one side roaring. But yet you just don't know if anything can stop the momentum. You know, it's like it doesn't look pretty. You could get caught up in the collateral damage as it barrels through. It could explode at any moment, or it could make it to the finish line before it blows up. It's going to blow up at some point.
We're going to see.
But it may be after the national championship game is over. I don't know. There's an explosion coming. Mark my.
And then Vanderbilt lost to Missouri. I don't know if we care. But
Vanderbilt made a game of it was the story there.
Yeah, they hung around.
Oh, Missouri.
They've gotten better. Vanderbilt's gotten better. They're not abysmal anymore. They're still just bad. All right. Next weekend. You ready?
Let's do it.
Arkansas at Mississippi State. Can the Hogs give them a game?
Let me tell you this, John. If you have bet against my lock of the week, you have won 75% of the time and made real cash money. I am 1-3 on locks of the week. You remember my lock of the week last week?
No.
It was Ole Miss over LSU.
Oh, nice.
Let's go ahead and lock up Mississippi State. Okay. Go ahead and hit it. Lock them up.
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
All right.
All right, Florida, Georgia.
You know, that we'll certainly have a nice prime 2:30 afternoon in the afternoon advantage to watch it. Can Florida do anything in this game, or is it going to be a rout?
I mean, they're going to lose, and they may lose badly. But here's what I want you to watch. Florida's defense is actually pretty good, and I think they could shut down Georgia a good bit of this game. Georgia's going to win because they're just better. And their defense is going to they may shut Florida out on the offense again. But I think Florida's defense is going to hold Georgia down.
It's going to be like 31-0, I think. 31
to 3. But, I mean, I'm going to tell you, they may hold Georgia to less than 200 yards rushing.
All right. I'd like to see it.
Kentucky at Missouri. Yeah. The battle for second place in the East?
Yeah, put it this way. If Kentucky is going to really be for real, they need to win this game because Missouri is a good team with serious, serious issues. And if Kentucky really wants to be taken seriously, they got to exploit those and win this game.
That's fair. And then Tennessee at South Carolina.
Oh, gosh.
Can South Carolina get off the map after last week and play a good game at home?
Well, Tennessee can score points on South Carolina, so it's really going to come down to how well Tennessee's defense plays, isn't it?
Yep.
I think we need for South Carolina to just roll. It would look a lot better for us.
I don't think Tennessee's offense is good enough to score with South Carolina. I think South Carolina's going to win.
We'll learn some things from this game. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
And then Louisiana Monroe at Texas A&M.
Hey, we found somebody that Texas A&M can play with. And they can actually win this game.
And Old Dominion at Vandy. There's another.
Vandy needs to play Old Dominion every week, is what they need. That
let's wait till they win and then you say that.
Yeah, that's true. Here is my other lock of the week. Let's go ahead and lock this one up too, which is
my cold dead hands.
Lock of the week.
This is what's going to happen. At some point during whatever game you're watching, there's going to be a flash across the bottom of the screen that's going to say something like Old Dominion 7, Vanderbilt 3. That's going to happen at some point in the day on Saturday. You're going to see that come up. Now, Vandy's going to win the game, but at some point you're going to see that score line right there. That's a double barrel, cold dead hand, second lock of the week.
Well, there you go.
All right. Any last thoughts before we bring this puppy home, blazing and on fire like the Mississippi State program?
No, I'm glad that our offense, you know, got it together before we go play this Ole Miss defense. I'm glad that the Auburn offense is executing at a high level and is prepared. Yeah. And I think we've learned a lot from going to Mississippi State in terms of playing on the road, of how, you know, not to handle that kind of environment.
You'd like to think it was some gain to us.
Well, I do. I think, you know, everything is you learn from experience, whether you succeed or fail. And right. I think the team learned about how to handle a road game. And I think they're going to, you know, it's going to be a different environment, and I think they're going to come out and play better at the start of this game than they did in the Mississippi State game.
Well, let's look at a couple of the things we've learned tonight. We've learned that Mississippi State is a 18-wheeler on fire, some wheels missing, but with a lot of momentum going down the road. We've learned that when Cameron Artis Payne has space, he can get some yards and Auburn can win. We've learned that probably Coach Snyder shouldn't be on the show anymore. I feel like we've learned something else. Surely in an hour and 15 minutes or so of this show, we've learned something more than just those three things. but I'm hard-pressed to say what it is. And that Napoleon was a three-point favorite on the road at Waterloo. There you go.
There you go.
Check out Decades of Dominance and Season of Our Dreams, our fantastic books about Auburn football on the Kindle and on the paper. You can go to Amazon.com and locate them. You can also check out our print columns at the WarEagleReader.com, where I actually wrote part of last week's column. I'm so proud of myself. It was
great.
Thank you. It was great for you not to have to write the whole thing. Is that what you mean? But it was good to get. I had a little more time. I was able to get in my share, which I've been sadly lacking on of late. All right. Maddie's going to be on here in just a second to tell you how to find the show. And our time is up. And as always, we thank you for yours. John, all I can say at this point is War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.